We've been in a series called Awakening. Last week we talked about Awakening to Purpose. I want this to be Awakening to Purpose Part 2. Thank you, by the way, that mysterious new song person that sends out all the wonderful birthday cards. Could we give them a hand of appreciation? They may be sitting among us. And this was the card to my daughter this week. God made you on purpose for a purpose. God made you on purpose for a purpose. You're as irreplaceable as the plan that God designed for your life. And today, I hope he reveals a glimpse of the many blessings he has in store for you. And that's my prayer, really, as we speak on purpose today. We've been talking about how the church needs an awakening. There's ominous signs all around us. I'm not going to go through them again this morning. If you haven't heard, you need to get one of the first part in this series. There's a history of awakenings that we've experienced in our nation. We're in need, I think, of the greatest one. And this morning, I want to kind of focus in on something found in a famous document. It's this saying right here. Would you read it with me this morning? All of you have heard it and you know it. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How about we say it together? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This concept of happiness is an important thing for us to tackle and think about and look at this morning. Because when we start talking about purpose, some of us get confused there, and we get into a very small story, as we talked about, and we lose sight of what our real purpose is. And I want to talk about that this morning. Before we do, I want to talk about the purpose of some things that you would be familiar with, like this one right here. How many of you know the purpose for this object? I started to bring one this morning, but it was used, and I didn't really want to bring it out here. Didn't think it'd be the most sanitary thing to have around, and I wasn't going to wash it. So anyway, you know what that's for. But you know what's funny is sometimes we take things that have a pretty obvious purpose, and we try to repurpose them. We try to find new purposes for them. We try to, I don't know who sits around and thinks up these type of things when you already have things, but some people like to find ways to use unusual things for things, like this right here. Do you know you can make a bulletproof vest out of sawdust? Did you know that, Craig? So you should probably be saving up that sawdust. Mix it with water. Don't try it at home, by the way. Please don't experiment with it and see whether or not it stopped a bullet, but I'm told it will. Here's one, you know, everybody has a deck of cards. You can, those things can be used as ninja stars. Please don't try that on your kids or anything. You can make a weapon out of newspaper. Literally, this started back in soccer games in other parts of the world. They couldn't bring weapons in, and they had such violent rivalries, they started bringing newspaper in and beating each other with it. You can actually use steel wool as fireworks. How about that? Might be better just to go buy some fireworks. But anyway, it's interesting how people repurpose things and come up with new things. And I want to talk about purpose this morning. Because we mentioned this last week, and I want to mention it to you again. To me, this is a powerful statement. It's from Andy Stanley, and I think it bears repeating. Those who devote themselves to themselves will ultimately have nothing but themselves to show for themselves. But if you devote yourself to more than yourself, you will ultimately have more than yourself to show for yourself. That's a pretty deep statement. I want you to think about it a little bit. You might even want to write it down in your notes just to keep before you, because we're going to try to unpack that a little bit. Let me just say that here's where I want to go and what I want you to think about. Purpose is a means to an end. Purpose is a means to an end. If you are the end, then you can't be the means. There might be somebody else in your life that was a means to your end, that gave themselves to mentor you, encourage you, help you find your calling. But you can't be a means to your own end. You cannot have purpose. Purpose is a path to meaning. Purpose is a path to meaning. Rather than asking yourself, what is my purpose? ask yourself, who is my purpose? See, purpose is always, it's always found just across the border of what's in it for me. To be empowered by purpose, you must become a means to an end that is not you. I want you to think about this. You need to write some of this down this morning. Meditate on this with me this week, because there's some powerful stuff here for you to really meditate on and ask God for insight. See, let me put it this way. And this goes back to the statement earlier, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's a part of the Declaration of Independence. It's a part of the inalienable rights that you and I have as citizens of the United States. Here's the problem with it. Oftentimes, the pursuit of happiness becomes a very myopic, narrow-minded, hearted thing, a very small thing that's really all about us. Now, I got to tell you, if you go back into the history of our nation, we were one of the most selfless and most caring people, and we lived in community, we helped one another, we went out of our way to sacrifice for one another. So that pursuit of happiness was seen in a very different context than it is today. But if you trace our generations, and I'd like to do a teaching on this sometime for you. You know, there was a generation called the Builders or the Traditionalists. And they were, in many people's mind, one of the greatest generations ever in the United States of America. And one thing that made them that is that they were absolutely selfless. They came together. It wasn't about who got the glory. It was about achieving great things together. It was about serving one another. It was about helping one another. But then out of that greatest generation, after World War II, the next generation got labeled the me generation. The me generation. And all of a sudden, instead of being a generation that was cooperating and known for cooperation and unity, we became very individualistic. And this pursuit of happiness took place within our own little small context, and everything in life became about making ourselves fulfilled and happy. And let me just make a statement here this morning. And this might be a little controversial, and I want you to think about it. I'm going to try to prove it to you this morning. But when you if your whole life's all about you, listen, when you get yourself the way you want yourself, you still won't be happy with yourself. See, there's this pursuit so many of us have undertaken, so many of us have given so much time and attention to, that's all about us becoming this idealistic person that we have in mind. But let me just say, happy always includes a who or two. Happy's never about just me or you. See, as long as you are all about you, you won't be happy. You can't be happy, because here's the truth. You can't fulfill you. You need more than you. How many of you tracking with me here this morning? See, if you had the right car, if you had the right house, if you had the right job, if you had the right body, if you had the right wife, the right husband, if you had the right kids, if you had the right look, if you had the right clothes, if you had all that stuff that we so often tend to project and think about and compare and look for, let me just tell you this morning, it still won't be enough, because you can't fulfill you. You're not enough. But all of us seem at times to be on this treadmill. We're running, we're striving, we're trying. And I know what I'm saying to you this morning is counterintuitive in a sense, but it's truth, and I want you to hear it with me this morning. You can't acquire enough. You can't consume enough. You can't exercise enough. You can't get enough to find your way to happiness. It's impossible. This is tricky. It's deceitful, because so many times we look at other people and we look at what they acquire and we look at how they look and we look at what they do and we kind of say in our own hearts, man, if I had that, I'd be happy. They look happy. They look happy. We don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. We don't really know, are they really happy? Because here's the truth of the matter. We all try to look like we've got it all together. We are all trying to project an image. We all tend to put on smiling faces. And it's interesting because in this culture we live in, we tend to create this composite person, that we kind of put together in our own mind. If I had that guy's body, that guy's house, that guy's car, and if I could bring all that together, I'd be happy. Really? The Bible talks about don't compare yourself with others. Don't compare yourselves with yourselves. Bob Goff says it this way. When we have a purpose, we're driven by that purpose, and it helps us not to be distracted by comparison. Oh, but we create this composite person that we put together. We get consumed with a quest to try to achieve that. You know what you call a composite person? There's a famous movie about a composite person that was put together from different parts and made into, anybody know who I'm talking about? Frankenstein, the monster, sewn together, knit together, all these different parts of different people. That's what he was. We compare, we consume, we exercise, and we act in such a way to be like others who quite honestly probably aren't happy themselves. Now, let me give you the counterintuitive truth. You can't compare, consume, exercise yourself to happiness, but you can serve and give and sacrifice your way to happiness. Now, don't leave on me. It's true. It's a biblical truth. And I want to prove it to you. I want to build the foundation of it. Some of you here this morning, you've already experienced exactly what I'm talking about. You're shaking your head going, yeah, I understand that. The more I give, the more I make it less about me, the more I make it about others, the more happiness that I truly find. Listen, there's loads and loads of research all over the world about this. Secular research proving this very point that I'm trying to make this morning. Asking the question, is there a connection between happiness and selflessness, sacrifice, service? And over and over and over again, all around this world, research project after research project has come to the very same conclusion. Absolutely, there is a connection between a person's willingness to help others, to volunteer, to give, to sacrifice, to be selfless in that person's overall happiness. It's been proven out time and time again. Let me give you a couple examples. The University of Chicago did a research project here not too long ago, and they asked the question, what are the most fulfilling jobs or careers out there? What are the most fulfilling jobs or careers? They made a list of categories, and here they are. Here are the top categories of jobs. Jobs where these were the most fulfilling. These were the ones that the people in them were the happiest. Jobs where you teach others. Jobs where you care for others. Jobs where you protect others. Those were the most, those were the categories where the top people, where they were absolutely the happiest and most satisfied. Listen, pay wasn't the issue. Pay was not the, it didn't matter how much you made, it mattered what you were doing, what you were giving yourself to. So in the UK, in Britain, there were 40 different studies asking the question, is there a connection between happiness and selflessness or serving others? This was a 20-year-long study. Want to hear the results of that one? People who had a lifestyle of serving. A lifestyle, not just once in a while, but they made it a regular part of who they were. Had less depression, less stress, less heart disease. There were great health benefits. Listen to this. Teens who were taught a lifestyle of serving had less drug abuse, less unwed pregnancies. In fact, the study went on to say that if you're a parent of a teen, you ought to force them to serve. Because even in forcing them, it opens them up in a newfound way, and they tend to have better, less drug abuse, less unwed pregnancies, feel better about themselves, and they end up being adults that volunteer and serve too. So in other words, overall, people who serve others have a better quality of life. So clinical research absolutely shows volunteering and mentoring others, listen, pumps up your immune system. pumps up your immune system. Weekly selfless activity increases your ability to fight disease. Now, how could that be? I mean, you know, and here's the quandary, right? Here's the challenge. Our natural inclination is to acquire, is to consume, is to try to look my best. And yet research all over the world says one of the absolute best things you can do for yourself is not to focus on yourself so much. Is not to focus on yourself so much. And yet we have people on Madison Avenue who are literally making billions of dollars trying to convince you that your real quest in life is to try to look like so-and-so, keep up with the Joneses, etc. We've been sold a bill of goods. It's a deception. You want to find happiness? Start finding who the people are that God's called you to serve. Who the people are that you are to pour your lives out for. Selflessness leads to better well-being and better health. So how is this? I mean, it's counterintuitive in our culture, isn't it? How can emptying myself make me feel so full? How can emptying myself make me feel so full? Let me give you two words that I think sum it up. You ready for these? Divine design. Divine design. What do you mean by that, Pastor Jeff? I mean simply that you were created by God to serve others, to care for others, to think of others. In the New Testament, there's this amazing list. I think there are 56 altogether that we call the one another's. And really, quite honestly, those one another's, they're the key to thriving in life. Love one another, care for one another, bear one another's burdens, serve one another, pray for one another. Are you part of a community that's doing that? I mean, maybe you're coming here to church on Sunday mornings, but you need to take another step. We got a bunch of small groups back there that are really the ideal place to live this out. Not just in that small group, but really to get the fire in your heart to live it out in your neighborhood. To live it out in your workplace, to be that one another. Listen, you'll be happier, you'll be healthier. You were designed by God to one another, one another. You ought to write that down. You were designed by God to one another, one another. And you'll do better and you'll be healthier if you really apply yourself to living out these one another's that are in the New Testament. See, selfishness comes naturally. I've said this many times. I grew up in just the most selfish, you know, self-centered situation. It was easy for me to be selfish. Nobody has to learn to be selfish. And we kind of come prepackaged that way because of the sin that has affected every one of us. You might say, wow, Pastor Jeff, you're really something. Well, you probably had your struggles too. God's probably working on you in this area too. He sure has been in me for many, many years. But here's the truth. You weren't originally designed that way. The divine design, God created you to serve and to give. If you can look past the sin and the fallenness in this earth that's caused so many of us to get consumed with our own selves, in reality, you were made by God to serve and to give. And you're never going to be happy when it's all about you. Even when you become the best version possible of yourself possible, it won't be enough, because you cannot satisfy you. There's something deep inside of you that's all about you needing to give, you needing to reach and touch and help others. If you haven't read The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren, it's one of the biggest selling books, hardback books ever. And I'm going to give you the key to the whole book, and it's really easy to find. It's page 1, sentence 1. And here it is. It's not about you. It's not about you. Now, that's a freebie I'm throwing in this morning for you. It's not about you. I want you to think about it. Because the degree to which you've made it about you is the degree to which you're unfulfilled and unhappy. It's not about you. Some of the happiest people you know. I mean, if you were to stop for a minute and really think about this, okay, your brain's probably already there. If you were to stop and think about some of the happiest people you know, they are some of the most selfless people you know. They're the ones that love to give. They're the ones that love to serve. They're the ones that love to come over and go out of their way to help you. They're the ones that it's just a habit. It's how they live. I can think of a lot of people in this congregation that's how they live. See, the honest truth is you might exercise more than they do, but they seem happier than you are. You might make more money than they do, but they seem happier than you. You might have accumulated more toys than they have. Because you're out there striving and working and angry and challenged and trying to get more and more. But in reality, they seem to be satisfied with what they have and they're happier than you are. Because see, if you scratch below the surface, they have something that you don't have. They found a way to give their life away. And they're reaping great reward because it's the divine design in their life. See, happy people find a way to give their life away. Let me show it to you scripture-wise. If you have your Bibles, turn to Galatians chapter 5. You know this passage, but I want you to look at it maybe in just a little bit of a different perspective this morning. Galatians chapter 5, starting in verse 19, the Apostle Paul really is laying out for us two approaches to life. And sadly enough, a lot of people are taking the first approach, and we'll talk about that rather than the second. Here we go, verse 19, the acts of the flesh. Let me just stop there for a minute, because what we're talking about here is the sinful nature. And what's the sinful nature? Well, let's kind of define it like this. If you could do whatever you wanted with whoever you wanted, if you could just go with the flow, always pursuing pleasure for yourself at even someone else's expense, that's the sinful nature. That's what a lot of people in this world are running after, going for. That's what a lot of our young people are being. They're being deceived into thinking that's the road or the path to happiness, when it absolutely is not. It is a path to destruction. Jesus said there is a narrow path to life, and there's a broad road that leads to destruction. You know, the challenging thing is over both of those paths are a neon sign that says life. The world's trying to sell our young people a bill of goods, saying, you know what, if you just make it all about you, if you just accumulate, if you just go out and do what you want to do, you'll be happy. And there's nothing further from the truth. Can I get an amen, church? There's a narrow path that leads to life. And I can tell you this, it's a path that's all about you losing your life, taking up your cross, and following Christ and giving your life away. See, this list he's getting ready to dive into, he says these things are obvious, but they're about appetites. And let me just tell you something about an appetite. When you feed a sinful appetite, it just grows. It just gets bigger and bigger. And when you can't satisfy that appetite, you become frustrated and angry, and it will leave you wanting more, and it will leave you frustrated and unhappy, because appetites are never fully or finally satisfied. That's what happens when you run after the things of the flesh. How many of you hear me this morning? Young people, young adults, I'm preaching to you. Listen, you've got choices to make, and you can make the right choices, and this is a key time in your life. Listen, you got pastors who love you and who want to help you find the best in God's plan and purpose for your life. So he goes on. He says it this way. Let me go back here in my notes. Just make sure I've got it all flowing exactly right here. Here we go. So the acts of the flesh are obvious. He says we don't probably have to state these, because it's pretty clear what they are. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery. What's debauchery, man? It's just living for yourself, doing what you want to do. Idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, envy, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. This is just that flesh let loose. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. And now here's what he's going to do. He's going to compare and contrast the fruit of the Spirit with the acts of the flesh. Now listen to this. This is a pretty cool list, and you know it, but I want you to listen with fresh ears. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, it's joy, it's peace, it's forbearance, it's kindness, Man, think of a place where there's just real love. Think of a place where there's enjoyable laughter. Think of a place where you feel really at peace. Think of a place where people are putting up with your weaknesses and they're loving you through your struggles and your challenges. Think of a place where people are genuinely kind, where there's goodness, where there's faithfulness, where there's people that you can depend on and trust in. Gentleness, where people are just gentle. They're not harsh. Where people are walking in self-control. They're not just doing whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it. And listen to these words right here. Could be, oh, I got to go into the next slide. You guys got to let me know when I'm on the wrong slide. This could be one of the most powerful statements in all of ancient literature. I mean, it's just a cool statement. Against such things, there's no law. Against such things, there's no law. I want you to imagine being in an environment where there's all those things I just mentioned. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness. How many of you'd like to be in a place like that? How many of you, let's go a step further. How many of you'd like to work in a place like that? Yeah. It's powerful. You, in other words, and almost everybody raised their hands. I'm not sure what the others were thinking, but you know, some people won't vote regardless of what you ask them. In other words, you were made for this. This is exactly what you were made for, those things. Man, this is how you flourish. Being in a community, a place that is focusing on those, maybe doesn't get it right all the time, but this is what a family of God ought to be characterized by. Would you be happy? Yes. A community like that, quite honestly, there's almost no need for any laws. I just want you to think about it, okay? Think about the world functioning under those principles right there. You're pulling out of an event in a crowded parking lot, and the police officer, the person directing traffic has to like really encourage you to go because you're letting the other guy out and the other guy's trying to let you out, and neither one of you are going because you're preferring the other person over yourself. We took our staff the other night to the John Christ concert at a local church and big church, and the parking lot was absolutely crowded. And man, I had laughed, I had fun. It was a good night. We laughed together till I got to that parking lot. Man, because let me tell you, Christians who come together and laugh together are not necessarily the nicest people when they're trying to get home. I got cut off. Nobody was going to let me out. People wouldn't even look at me. I'm just sitting there behind my little wheel trying to get home. And it's like every man for himself. That isn't the way it ought to be, really. You imagine a place characterized by this kind of life, this kind of selflessness. This is what we were created for, but selfishness is what's natural. But it's not by design. Everything works a whole lot better when we're characterized by these fruits of the Spirit. Could you say amen to that? So let me go to something pretty serious here for a minute. Let me ask you a question. I want you to think about this question. It's a powerful question. How do we measure the value of a life? How do you measure the value of a life? Can I just tell you, one of the ways that a life's value is measured is what happens at a funeral. Somebody stands up to speak and honor the person that's being laid to rest. And I don't know about you, but I've never yet been to a funeral where somebody stood up and talked about how much that person got drunk and how immoral they were and how they had an explosive temper and how any time they had an opportunity, they cheated others, and how much they lied. Now, we don't talk about that because that has no value and makes no contribution to society. So even in situations like that where it's quite honestly difficult and awkward, we try to say things that are nice. But honestly, somebody who lives a life like that, listen, those things are all consumptive. You know, it's all about being pleasure oriented at somebody else's expense, and they add nothing to society, and no one's life who is characterized by those kind of things is truly happy. I guarantee it. And you know what? They don't make the people around them happy either. If you've lived with anybody like that or brushed up close to someone like that, you know what I'm talking about. And yet, if I'm really honest with you here this morning, there's days where I'm tempted to get up and make my life all about myself. If you're really honest, you probably have some days like that too. And, you know, sometimes I think God must look down, kind of put his hands on his hips and kind of shake his head looking at me going, man, when are you going to get this right, Jeff? It is not all about you, pal. And you're not going to find happiness and fulfillment when it's all about you. Selfishness is natural, but you're not designed for selfishness. Can I say it this way? Selfishness will ultimately kill you. It'll cost you your life. See, the value of a life's always measured by how much of it was given away. I was at a true friend's funeral here recently. Ben's dad, Bob Broadbeck, passed away unexpectedly. And I wanted to be there to honor Bob because he was a friend to me. And he touched my life in a way that I'll never forget. And at the funeral, there was a number of people that got up to speak and to thank God for a life that was characterized by giving and sacrifice, because that's the way Bob's life was. And one that really stood out to me was a little boy who got up to speak. In fact, I've known the little boy. His name's Soar, and he got up and he said, it was so powerful and so precious, just this little boy getting up in the middle of the funeral, and he says, Bob was my friend. And he said, Bob would invite me over to his pool to go swimming. He was so kind to me. He encouraged me, and he gave so much to me. I wrote a poem to honor him. Talk about a touching moment. And so many others got up and shared stories of how Bob had helped them, including myself, just thanking God for a man who was a true friend. See, that's what we celebrate. It's what we intuitively know is most valuable about life. It's giving your life away that makes you great. When you give your life away, you know, people will look at you and they will almost always say, that was a great man, or that was a great woman. I think of my friend Mary Bennett, and some of you remember Mary, who came and shared here with us at one occasion. Mary Bennett's in her 70s, and it was just about 2 years ago. Mary Bennett had a heart attack and heart failure, and her lungs were filled with fluid, and she was in the hospital, and she was literally on death's door, and she was in the hospital for months. And I went to Lexington and visited her and prayed over her, and we were trying to figure out what to do with the incredible ministry that she started called Sunshine Children's Home in Line Fork, Kentucky, in the heart of the Appalachia Mountains. See, long ago, Mary left Los Angeles, moved back to her home. It was sacrificial. She didn't want to go, but she felt the call of God. And she opened a home to take in these kids who had been abandoned and abused, and she's done it for years and years and years. And she was a means to an end. It wasn't about her. It was about making those kids' lives valuable. It was about making a difference in those kids' lives. And let me tell you what, when she was in the hospital, those kids started coming out of the woodwork. They were honoring Mama. They were talking about the sacrifice Mom had made for them. It was powerful. Now, let me fast forward a little bit. 2 years later, Mary's recovered. She's in her 70s. They said she wasn't going to live. They said that she wouldn't make it. There was times where it just didn't look possible that she would live on. And not only has she lived, she's back at the children's home. She's back in charge. And I just got a card from her, because she sends us one almost every month thanking you for your monthly donation through the Harvest Project. And guess what she said? I just adopted a new baby. She's in her 70s, and she's caring for that little child who otherwise wouldn't have had anybody to care for her. I mean, I think about Bert and Rich going down there every week to these young African-American kids and pouring their lives out, mentoring them. I think about Timlin, who's going to A Woman's Choice and loving on these young ladies that are struggling with unwanted pregnancies and trying to figure out what to do. I think about Rana, who's over here and going to the refugee peoples in our city and loving on them and opening her home to them. I think about Mona, who's going down to the Esther's house and giving and serving these young ladies who are coming off the street. Listen, there's a contentedness that comes from giving your life away, pouring your life out for others. Listen, these folks and others have discovered a secret. It's the secret sauce, folks. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Who said that, by the way? Those words are in red in your Bible and in mine if you have a red letter Bible. Somehow Jesus knew what would bring fulfillment to our hearts, didn't he? Giving is what fills an individual up. You want to be happy? Then you have to find a way to give your life away to others. Not just once a year, not just twice a year when we have a big church or a big, you know, big church event, but systematically give it away. And you just try it and see if this doesn't make a difference. Here, by the way, is the opening of Esther's house. Right there in the middle is Summer Dickerson with the pink hair. She's only been saved for 2 years. This gal was on the streets living the life of a prostitute, has become radically saved, transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light, and now is turning around and paying it forward, has a house full of 10 young ladies that have been rescued off the street that she's mentoring and loving. If you notice today as you walk out, all those bags that we collected for bag hunger and bag homelessness tomorrow are going down to Esther's house to bless these ladies. Can you give the Lord praise for that? Isn't that cool? Let's fill it back up, by the way. Fill it back up. Take a bag as you leave today. Let me show you a picture. You know what this is? Anybody know what this is? This is kind of a famous place on the face of this earth. It's called the Dead Sea. And many years ago, I had the privilege of being there at the Dead Sea. It's quite an experience. It's the lowest place on earth. Do you know that? We talk about sea level, and because of that, it's an interesting thing. The Jordan River dumps into the Dead Sea, but it's such a low place, the water just gathers there, and the water has nowhere to go. It never goes out. So guess what? Nothing can live in the Dead Sea. There's no fish. There's no marine life whatsoever. It's just dead. But yet all this water's pouring in. It's very interesting. Take a look at this picture. A few years ago, scientists began to recognize and realize, and it's a mystery, that the Dead Sea is drying up. And literally, the nation of Israel is pumping thousands and thousands of gallons of water into the Dead Sea to try to save the Dead Sea, because it's a mystery. They don't know why it's drying up. Isn't that interesting? 87 miles away is what's called the Sea of Galilee. And I remember being there too, and what a beautiful place that is. There's resorts all around the Sea of Galilee. There's skiing and SUPing and all kinds of cool things happening all over the Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee has water coming in and water going out. It's a beautiful living place. But it's interesting, that same water flows 87 miles down to the Dead Sea. And let me just ask you a question here this morning. How is it that water's flowing into the Dead Sea and not flowing out, and yet the Dead Sea's getting smaller? How is that? Let me just say this. If you don't figure out how to give your life away, you are the Dead Sea. And it might be a mystery to you, but your life will become smaller and smaller and smaller. And you'll become more frustrated and more unhappy. And a lot of us have been falling for the lie. Every time, if only I had this, if I only looked like that, if only I had that house, if only I had that car. That's a lie, folks. We need to wake up to the purpose that God has created us for. You were designed by God to give your life away. You need more than you. You were designed by the giver of life to give your life away. Would you bow your heads, close your eyes with me? I'm going to ask worship team to come back up and ministry team to come up. Let me pray.